Accession number 25195, Reel 1.
Well, my full name is Alison Clara Lillian Gill, and I was born on the 5th of February 1921.
And what were the dates of your service?
Well, I was called up on the 7th of September 1942, and I was discharged on the 21st of July 1945. I was discharged then because I was expecting a baby. Para 11, they called it.
And what did that mean?
Oh, it just meant if you were pregnant, you could be discharged.
And what was your rank on leaving the service?
I was junior commander, which is the equivalent of a captain.
And did you serve in the other ranks before you were commissioned, or was it a commission all the way through?
It was a direct commission, but I had to go into the OCTU as an ordinary rank.
And what did you do before you joined the ATS?
Well, I was at university. I did a BSc degree. I was going to be a teacher, and I decided I didn't want to teach, so I thought it would be a good idea to join up instead. The War Office sent an officer round to universities to recruit students who thought they would like to go into the services.
So you volunteered?
Yes, I volunteered.
And why did you volunteer rather than wait to be conscripted?
Well, I wouldn't have been conscripted. Certain professions, I can't remember the name they call it, certain professions were exempt from being called up. And as I was going to be a school teacher, I would be exempt.
So what was your family and friends' reaction when you volunteered, knowing that you could have been in a reserved occupation?
I think they were quite envious. I think quite a few of my friends didn't want to be teachers. And my father didn't mind because he'd been in the First World War as an officer, but he was also a school teacher, so perhaps he was a bit divided about me joining up.
And what about your uniform? Where did you go to get that, and what did you think about it?
Oh, yes, when I was enrolled, I was sent to OCTU, which was in Windsor, and we were issued with an ordinary ranks uniform, but as an officer cadet, you had a white band round your cap. And at OCTU, you were given a grant to purchase your officer's uniform, and I went to a tailor's in Eton to have mine made.
And so after you enlisted, you volunteered and went to the office to volunteer and get a uniform and everything. Where did you go for training?
When we were first commissioned, we had to go to an ATS camp. I went to a big camp in Leicester where I think I went with one of the other girls who was going into REME, and we were at this unit for only a week or a fortnight, a short time. I don't think they knew what to do with us because the radio course at Petersham didn't start until I think it was November. But when after a week at the big ATS camp in Leicester, I was sent to the radar school in Petersham, which is near Richmond in Surrey.
So, your trade, what's your trade?
What do you mean by trade?
What were you trained as? You're an engineer, radio engineer?
Well, that's what we were going to be trained as. When they came recruiting students at the universities, they would accept anybody that had a degree. I think they thought there's an open body that perhaps had the brain to do a university course was good enough to train in this, it was radiolocation, yes, really, radio electrical engineering.
And what was the discipline like at training?
At Petersham, well, there wasn't any really, it was good fun.
So morale was good?
Yes, oh yes.
What about the social life at Petersham?
Yes, we were billeted out. I was sent to a private house. It was some way away from Petersham. And it wasn't very convenient. I had to get two buses into the school. But after a fortnight, they had a vacancy at a hotel in Richmond. And I and a friend that were billeted there. And there was more social life there because there were one or two forces people there. I can't remember who else was there.
So accommodation was generally good?
Yes, it was good. It was really a hotel accommodation.
Were your friends envious with your civilian friends?
Yes, I think they were, because another girl joined up, not into REMI, she went into another branch of the ATS. She did social science. She volunteered when she knew that I was having a good time.
And did you have any overseas service during your time?
No, I didn't.
So what was the reaction of male colleagues in the ATS? I mean, how did men feel taking orders from a woman?
No, they didn't seem to mind. I think the men officers thought we were a bit odd because we were the first women to go into these REMA units. Actually, when I finished at Petersham, it would be March 1943, I was sent to a REMA workshop in Callington in Cornwall with another girl. Two of us went there. And the men officers didn't really know how to treat us, you know. I think they were a bit nervous. And perhaps they thought these brainy women coming. But after I'd been in workshops for some weeks, was really not much for us to do. There were several young men officers. I think they were waiting to be posted overseas, and they brought the two women in to replace them. But the workshop was full of officers. So in the end, the other girl was posted somewhere else, and I was sent out onto a gun site in Plymouth as a radio maintenance officer, an RMO, they used to call us. That's really what I'd been trained to do. And I had two ATS radio mechanics there. I got on well with them. And later on, I had some men craftsmen. They looked after radio equipment on the guns. And I also had a REMI staff sergeant to help me. But the staff sergeant I had was fine. I mean, he didn't mind at all having a woman officer. And the craftsman didn't mind either. I didn't find any sort of bad feeling amongst the men, as I say, except some of the men officers thought we were a bit odd. And some of the battery commanders, of course, the gun sites were under the Royal Artillery. And there was a colonel in charge of two sites. Or was he a major? No, only a major. And one or two of the majors, I don't think, liked having women RMOs on site. But most of them I met were very good, very helpful.
They treated you as an equal?
Yes, they did, yeah.
And what was it like working in a man's world?
I enjoyed it. Yes, and there was no problem.
And what about socialising when you're actually at coastal batteries?
Yes. Of course, we had dances in the NAFI, the officers and other ranks. I'm trying to remember how many officers there'd be in the battery. I was in what they call the off-site. The major would be at the main site, and I was in the off-site at Seaton Barracks. I think there were four men officers and two ordinary ATS officers that looked after the girls, because it was a mixed battery, of course, and just I was the technical officer there. So there would be three women and perhaps four men. And we used to go into the NAFI and with the troops and have dances and so on.
So was there a problem with officers socialising with other ranks, or was that sort of discipline left behind?
Yes. I don't think... difficult to say. I'm trying to think back. I mean, at these dances, I mean, I would dance with the other ranks. There's no problem there. But I wouldn't have a date with another rank. I mean, that wouldn't be done. It was the same with the men officers. I mean, they had girlfriends in the other ranks, but it was all sort of kept quiet. I mean, it wasn't something that you broadcast around.
Would you have been discharged if you'd had a date or a relationship with another rank?
No, you wouldn't. You would have been posted. If anything undesirable was happening, you would be posted to another unit well away.
Did that happen much? Did you know?
No, I didn't. It was... I can't remember any problems there.
So, I mean, what you mentioned dances, did you go to the pictures or anything else? What other sort of social activities did you have?
Yes, we used to go to the cinema. We didn't have any social activities outside the camp. I think I went to one or two concerts they put on at the American Mess. There was a big American mess in Plymouth, and they used to invite us, I think, to dances. I went to one or two of those. Is it working?
So how did you get to choose Remy? Was it your first choice?
Well, there was no choice. I told you that an officer came around to the university's recruiting. Actually, two were there. There was an army major and there was an RAF man. And the army major, I think, said to me, "It's girls, we want to go into the army. Would that be all right?" I said, "Oh, yes, that would be all right." So... it was really, I suppose I could have said, "Oh, I'd rather be a WAF," but I went along with it. I said, "Oh, yes, the army's fine."
So did you think that was a good decision, or in the end would you have liked to have been a WAF?
No, I'm glad I was in the ATS, because the ATS at some times, and probably even now, got a bad name. It was supposed, you know, girls of easy virtue in the ATS, but I mean, it was no worse than civilian life. And of course, anybody who thought they were somebody went into the Wrens. They were posh, stuck up, but I was pleased to be in the army, particularly as my father had been in the army and my brother.
So, how far did you have to move from
home? Oh, well, I lived in Cheshire and I was posted down to Cornwall, so it was quite a way.
And, You're a university student, so you basically left home. But what did you think of going from student life to the army life?
It was just an adventure. I was pleased that I'd got out of teaching.
So what was pay generally like?
Oh, I can't remember what we had, but it was always good. I mean, it was really like pocket money. I mean, you were fed and housed.
And accommodations when you were at the battery, was that in private billets as well?
Oh, no, we were in Nissen huts. Oh, no, that was fun. The gun sight, but all Nissen huts, you know, these corrugated iron things. And I shared a Nissen hut with... sometimes only one ATS ordinary officer, and sometimes two, just depended who was in the unit.
So, during your service, what was the daily routine? If you had a daily routine?
Well, on the gun site, of course, breakfast first, I suppose perhaps 8 o'clock. And I had a little office on the site where I used to sit and read the instructions that had come from the workshop. Of course, practically all the personnel on the gun site were Royal Artillery, the men manning the guns and the girls manning the radar equipment. And each morning they had to do what they called T's and A's, tests and adjustments. So they would be in the radar sets. I'll talk about that later, doing their tests. And after they'd, very often when they were doing them, they'd come perhaps to my office and say, oh, there's a fault on the receiver, we can't get a picture. So I'd get the radio mix and say, go and have a look to see what's the matter. So they, and we were supposed to spend a certain amount of the day when the Royal Artillery weren't using the equipment in sort of cleaning it and dusting it and seeing if everything worked. The equipment, actually I was disappointed here that there was no radar equipment on each gun site. There was a huge cabin with a receiver in, about the almost that's, you know, from that door across here, that size, with a big receiver and another bit of equipment the other side of the field, which was a transmitter equally big. And so you went up the steps into these boxes to do the work. But the transmitter had two ATS Royal Artillery girls working it. One would have done, but for sort of security reasons, for the happiness of the girls, they thought there ought to be two there, not one woman alone. And the receiver had three, because there were three screens they had to look at, almost like television screens, and adjustments they had to make. So the Royal Artillery girls actually did the manning, but the RMO and the two radio mechs had to put faults right and keep the equipment clean and functioning.
So when your mechanics were working, were they in your building or?
No, they just went and did what they wanted to on the site. The sites were quite big, you know, a big field with I don't know how many huts there'd be for accommodation. I can't even remember how many personnel there would be. There was a big hut, the Naffy. The Naffy was always open. They could go in there for a cup of coffee and a gossip.
So how did you get them back when you wanted them back to work? Back.
I can't remember. I think we had certain times of the day when they used to come to the office. That's right, in the mornings, as I say, after the Royal Artillery girls had done their tests and adjustments, we took over the set, and perhaps till lunchtime, then they'd go off for lunch, and then they'd perhaps come to the office at 2 in the afternoon to see what they should do. I think there was quite a lot of ATS training for them with the other ATS on the site, but I didn't go to any of that, the sort of admin side. I left, it didn't concern me. But I was in charge of 2 or 3 gun sites, so in the afternoon, and I had a little car with an ATS driver, we'd drive over to one of the other sites to see everything was in order. We had another gun site, the main one was in Plymouth. I don't know whether you know Plymouth. And the other part of the battery was out in down at a place called Beer Alston, which is a lovely place right out in the country. And it took about half an hour to drive to Beer Alston. So that was the afternoon gone.
So how many batteries did you have in your control?
some of the time, two batteries, the one I lived with, and the others I used to visit, so that would be four gun sites, wouldn't it? Sometimes it was only three. Yes, I think generally four. The other one was in Plymouth, right above the railway station. And the other one, that's right, I remember now, was the other side of the Tamar, at a place called Salt Ash. So those were the four sites. And of course, I had to go into workshops every so often. That was Callington to report, and they had sort of meetings there. The 18th ACAC Workshop Company, it was.
Yes, I was going to ask you about your... how did you keep in touch with the actual REME personnel?
Yes, it was a workshop in Callington. There was a major in charge there. I actually married the major. So it was a good move going into the ATS.
So how much... connection did you actually have with the
workshop? Oh, quite a lot. One of the officers used to come around to the site to see if we were doing our work properly. Generally, it was a captain came. Sometimes a major came as well. And they were always getting what they called modification circulars. The War Office started those. They'd send out these printed sheets with modifications that had to be done to the equipment. The REME people had to do that, but that was done in the workshop. And if a modification had to be done on the gun sight equipment, people would come out from workshops to do it.
Did that happen very often, modifications?
Yes, quite a lot, yes. I'll leave it with you. There's an amusing thing that somebody printed out. It's just a sort of spoof modification. You won't, better not read it now. Take up the time.
Ever in action?
Oh yes, we had one or two enemy aircraft over Plymouth, but the main bombing was done before I was there. The town was very badly damaged, but we must have had, I don't know, perhaps three or four emergencies, and the aircraft came over, Germans, and the batteries fired.
So was aircraft recognition part of your training, or was this more part for the operator?
No, it was the operator's training. Although we had a new equipment sent out to the receivers. It was called an IFF thing. It was a little box with a television screen. IFF, meaning identification, friend or foe. And a friendly aircraft was supposed to switch it on, and you get this friendly signal on. But if they didn't switch it on, or if it was an enemy, you didn't get a signal, or it might have been the other way around. The trouble is, I think some of the British aircraft forgot to switch on their IFF, so they were fired up, but luckily not shot down.
I was going to say, did you have any friendly fire incidents?
No, nothing as terrible as that. And I don't think we shot down any enemy either, but we had a go. The gun started up.
Was there any problem between ATS and Royal Artillery girls?
Between who?
Between
the Radio Mex? No. Oh, no, they were good friends.
Can you think of any amusing stories that
happened
during your time?
Most of it was amusing. It doesn't sound the right thing to say about a war. Yes. I can remember he was a captain in charge of the battery, the Royal artillery captain drawing me aside and saying, "Alison, could you tell your staff sergeant to restrain his language in the gun barge?" And I told staff, what was his name? Staff Price. I mentioned this to Staff Sergeant Price. "Well, he should have had the guts to tell me to my face. He shouldn't have involved you in it." And some more lovely swear words. But he was very good, that Staff Sergeant. He was a great help.
Was that a particular problem? Did the girls get offended by this guy swearing? Or
I'm sorry.
Were the girls offended by the by?
No, swearing? No, it's part of life. No, I think the girls enjoyed it as well. Some of them, I can remember one poor little girl. Was she a radio mech? I think she was a radio mech. She was what they called gun shy. If the guns fired, they didn't often fire, but I said we did have enemy action. She was absolutely terrified. She'd sort of cower in a corner. But she got posted. She was posted, I think, back to workshop where there weren't any guns firing.
And you mentioned the Leffe. Was this mixed ranks?
Oh, yes. No, it was. Oh no, it was mixed. Could you see there were only five officers, five or six. I don't know how many other ranks on the site. 100 at least, because there would be four anti-aircraft guns to be manned. Of course, the men, I don't know how many men there were at each gun, perhaps five, and a lot of sort of hangers on.
Did you ever get any special visits to the guns? Did Winston Churchill ever visit, or any other members of?
No, we used to get the brigadier coming round, the artillery, the Royal Artillery Brigadier used to come, and a senior ATS officer from Bristol, the headquarters was Bristol, she used to come sometimes. No, there weren't any famous people came.
What about inspections? Did you have the usual sort of military inspections at all?
No, not on the gun site. We used to. Now this is going on a bit. When the war was coming to an end in Europe, the gun sites in the West Country were closed down, and I was sent to a practice camp in Norfolk, a place called Weybourne on the East Coast. That was a practice camp, so that was quite big, and there were quite a lot of officers. And we used to get an inspectors came round there. You asked for an amusing incident. Well, when I was there, there was this radar equipment we had. Although it wasn't an operational site, it was a practice firing camp, so they used to actually fire and they would use the radar equipment. We had a visit from the Rheamy Brigadier, and we didn't know he was coming. And there was a man, radio officer, really in charge. I was just sent there because they didn't know what to do with me, and because there was really nothing to do, we'd been cementing the steps up to the workshop, and I got on my overalls, no badges of rank, and somebody phoned up Peter Harker, who was the man officer in charge, the lieutenant, and said, "We've got the brigadier down here and he's coming up to see you." So I kept out of the way, out of the workshop, and anyway the brigadier arrived and he was going to walk up these newly cemented steps, and Peter Harker was hovering behind him, no sir, not up there, which was terribly funny. And then a bit later on, anyway, the brigadier was taken into the workshop. And Peter Harker put his head out of the door and said, called to me, "Oh, the brigadier wants to see you." Apparently the brigadier had said to him, "Who's that girl out there? Is she a radio mech?" And Peter Harker said, "No, she's a junior commander," which was the equivalent of a captain. But anyway, the brigadier was quite amused. He was a human being. So that was an amusing incident, I remember.
And you said some Americans were stationed quite close to...
In Plymouth, yes.
Did you have any dealings with them?
Quite a lot of socialising there, and so did the other ranks. They used to invite us to concerts, and I think they perhaps... I don't think they used to come into the NAFI. But we certainly did have some social contacts. I think we invited them into the mess, one or two of them, of the office was for a meal.
Did